my friendship with Nick Rockefeller was one where we were we expressed ideas to each other and thoughts and philosophies, and he wanted me to become part of what they were doing, and for me to become a member of the CFR, and offered various business opportunities for me to get involved in, and for me to not take up the fight or the battle that I've been taking up in the past, you know, to drop that idea, because what was the point of my fighting for the people? I was a guy who was very successful in the movie business, and I saw the truth of what was happening. I tried to express it to the people, and rather than having me express it to the people, they wanted me to join their side because I was a mover and a shaker, and rather than me opposing them, to join them. It was real simple, and he tried to recruit me into that situation, and I didn't go for it.
Did he get angry when you didn't go for it?
No, no. And, you know, it's like, you know, I remember one time he said to me, you join us, so you have an ID card, Aaron, you know, you have a chip, and your chip will say KMA on it. And I said, what does KMA mean? He said, it means kiss my ass. And anybody stops you, a cop or whatever, and you show them your card or your chip, and they'll know to leave you alone, because you're one of us.
Welcome back, friends. Welcome back to another edition of Questions for Corbett. I'm your host, as always, James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, coming to you in March of 2026 with, I believe, a first in QFC history. Namely, today, I'm going to take a question that I answered to the best of my ability with the information at the time nearly a decade ago, and revisit that question in the light of newly released information that, yes, is broadly along the lines of what I answered all those years ago, but is even more crazy than I imagined. So you're in for a doozy. Strap in. And all of this relates to what we just witnessed. You remember that? That was Reflections and Warnings, an interview with Aaron Russo, which was released by Alex Jones and the InfoWars crew back in 2009 and made a lot of waves in the independent media space at that time. If you happened to be around, or even in the intervening years, you've probably heard or seen this interview at some point, or referenced at some point, where Aaron Russo talked about, amongst other things, of course, he was the documentary filmmaker behind the Freedom to Fascism documentary, which was very important and influential in the early 2000s in the freedom movement, but he was also, as he revealed in that interview with Aaron, with Alex Jones, he was also a friend of a Nicholas Rockefeller, who befriended this Hollywood producer and started talking to him behind the scenes about various things. And that, again, has become common knowledge. You remember it by now. He talked about there's an event that's going to happen in the near future. This was right before 9/11. He was talking about invasion of Afghanistan and Iraq, and he was talking about what was going to happen, the development of the police state, and people are going to get microchipped, but, you know, us elites are going to have the KMA microchip. What does that stand for? Kiss my ass, all that. He talked about feminism and how the whole feminist movement was set up by the Rockefellers to basically bring the other half of the workforce into the workforce so that they could be taxable and children could be educated in indoctrination camps, et cetera, et cetera. You have heard some version of this surely by now. And if you haven't, well, obviously you can follow the link in the show notes to watch that full interview with Aaron Russo when he talks about his experiences. But you can also watch this clip from Questions for Corbett number 38 on who is Nicholas Rockefeller, where 9 years ago, I had a question about this very topic. The next question is an email question. It's in from Vega, who writes, what is your take on Aaron Russo's interview where he exposed the 9/11 fraud, Rockefeller-funded feminism, and microchipping? Who was this Nick Rockefeller? Can't seem to find much about him. Excellent question, Vega. Thank you for the question. So, who was Nick Rockefeller? That's an interesting question. So for people who don't know, this is about, I think it was Warnings and Reflections, something like that. That was the name of this hour-long interview with Aaron Russo that was fairly well known, I would say, in conspiracy circles a decade ago. It was one of Aaron Russo's final interviews, and he talked about a number of things, including meeting Nicholas Rockefeller of the Rockefeller family, who told him back in 2000, told him that there was going to be an event, and on that event they were going to go into Afghanistan and Iraq and maybe Venezuela after that, and this and that was going to happen, and ultimately you were all going to be microchipped and
blah, blah, blah. There's a lot of details in that, including, Aaron, why do you think we helped bring feminism about? It's not why you think, and all that kind of stuff. So that's it was a fairly well-known story, at any rate, a decade ago in conspiracy circles. I don't know how much it's common knowledge these days, and you can still see that interview online. It's widely available. But the question is, who is Nicholas Rockefeller? Aaron Russo, in that interview, I think they showed the picture of Aaron with Nicholas Rockefeller. So it's this guy. And everyone at the time, including myself, just took it, Nicholas Rockefeller, must be a Rockefeller, must be part of the Rockefeller family. But is he? So this is the Rockefellers, an American dynasty, Peter Collier and David Horowitz, which is one of the standard Rockefeller biographies from the 70s. And it has the most thorough Rockefeller family tree that I know of, in graphic form anyway, that goes up to the fourth generation, which at that time was the kind of operative generation, or the up-and-coming generation, I should say, back in the 70s, which presumably Nicholas Rockefeller would have at least been in that generation. One would imagine he wouldn't have been born after, in the 1970s. So here is that, and he's certainly nowhere on here. He's not on the John D. Rockefeller family tree. Now, it's possible he could be elsewhere on the Rockefeller family tree, i.e. William Rockefeller, who was John D.'s younger brother and a co-founder of Standard Oil. But as far as I can tell, and as much as I can research into that, William's Rockefeller's family lineage does not show any Nicholas in the grandson generation. So no sign of him there. Perhaps he was part of him, even, one of the other branches of the Rockefeller family tree. Maybe, Lucy or Marianne or Franklin or Francis, who, no one even knows about. If Nicholas Rockefeller is on the Rockefeller family tree, and I can't find him anywhere on there in any permutation, but if he is somewhere there, he may be on one of the kind of outer branches of the family tree, not part of the, quote-unquote, the Rockefeller family, i.e. the John D. Rockefeller lineage. He is not part of that family. So that's interesting. So who is he? Well, he is a real person. He is a person. We can determine that. He has a highly sketchy website, which you can go and check out, nicholasrockefeller.org. And there is a Bloomberg page on him, noting that he is an attorney. He's named as a member of the advisory board for the RAND Center for Asia Pacific Policy. He is a CFR member that you can confirm on the CFR membership page. There's a New York Times article from 1999 about a luxury hotel deal in Indonesia that his Rock Vested Development Group was part of, that does mention he is connected with the Rockefeller family, but does not give any details of that. And then this Rockfest development doesn't seem to be in any way related to the Rockefeller, i.e. Rockefeller Foundation, Rockefeller Brothers Fund, any of that kind of stuff. So it just gets sketchier and sketchier. My best guess at this, and I don't have the 100% details on this, but my best guess on this is that either Nicholas Rockefeller is some very fringe kind of member of one branch of the Rockefeller family tree that's far from the center and uses that name, like, oh, I'm a Rockefeller, but isn't really, he's not David, he's not, one of the brothers or what have you. So it might be that situation, or he might be a con man. I mean, it might be someone with the name Rockefeller who's just using that name, like, just, hey, I'm Rockefeller, I'm Rockefeller. It could be a complete con man, for all I know. I don't know, but he's clearly something. He's on CFR and what have you, so he's something. But what relation to the Rockefeller family tree, I don't know. And to some extent, there's some kind of con going on here. I mean, he's not in the thick of things, because there's very, very little information about him online, very little that you can find that's of any substance.
As I say, hopefully you remember that information and you remember that answer that I was able to give back in 2017, and my ultimate conclusion that, yes, this was a con of some sort being played on someone. Well, boy, was I right, and in the most surprising way possible. And the information has now come to light. And we're going to take this, firstly, from how I discovered this information was from a recent Substack post by a good friend of the show and previous guest here on Corbett Report, Jacob Nordengard. On his Pharos Chronicles Substack, he recently had this post: Nicholas Rockefeller, the greatest imposter in American history? ? And Jacob, who I hope my listeners know, was the author of this tome, Rockefeller Controlling the Game, which is an important book that goes into great degree of detail about the Rockefellers and their many connections to power and how it really operates in our society. So this was a name that had been on Jacob Nordengard's research radar independently from my own for many years. And he had looked into it and decided, yeah, there isn't enough to really go on. So Nicholas Rockefeller only makes one brief written appearance in this book, and that is on a list of Rockefellers associated with the Council on Foreign Relations, because as we went through, yes, Nicholas Rockefeller really was on the CFR. So whoever that was really was a CFR member. But that's as far as it went for really either of our research and what we could really nail down about this guy. But as Jacob Nordengard points out in this new article, this astonishing revelation has come into a new light, as in the astonishing revelations that Russo told us about Nicholas Rockefeller's off-the-record conversations. After Nicholas Rockefeller's death on Halloween 2024, it was revealed that he was not a Rockefeller at all, but an incredibly sophisticated fraudster who managed to fool everyone in 40 years. His real name was Spiro Pavlovich III. An incredible story. So, of course, I will first and foremost direct people to Jacob's Substack, but from there you will see the link to what is a multi-part series by this author, this journalist, Jonathan Alter, about the 40-year con. Nicholas Rockefeller, Yaley, Davos man, member of multiple boards, died a pillar of the West Coast establishment. Then the truth came out. And well, we'll get into this and the story behind it, but first you have to know a little bit about Jonathan Alter and his appearance in this story, which actually goes back to 1976, when Alter was, I think, an 18 or 19-year-old applying to become part of the Harvard Crimson journalist team. And in order to do that, he had to earn his journalistic chops by reporting on some important story. So he decided to report on something that was happening there at Harvard there in 1976, the dramatic expose and expulsion of a serial fraudster from Harvard. It was a piece that he wrote for the Crimson in March 1976 under the headline "A Rose by Any Other Name." And he writes about this Spiro Pavlovich III, who was charged with twice bluffing his way into Harvard Law School, and also his wife, Monette, who was attending the business school after allegedly faking transcripts in order to get in. She was also arrested by the FBI for falsifying applications for government-insured loans. So that was a federal crime that they were charged with there. And this goes into the story of Spiro Pavlovich III and his background and his colorful youth and stories that followed him around, even back when he was in high school, pulling what is described as pranks, but really was fraud. For example, while he was attending Loyola in New Orleans, he sponsored an expensive formal and tried to pass off an unknown nightclub singer as Aretha Franklin, promoted it as an Aretha Franklin concert. Apparently, he didn't just try that once. He tried it on multiple occasions and was run out of town on a couple of occasions. But in the fall of 1968, he showed up at Harvard Law School, where he spent the next 2.5 years as a diligent student. But when it came time for a summer internship, he started telling tall tales and spinning yarns and saying that he was the great grandnephew of Tsar Nicholas of Russia. He was interviewing for someone who he told that he was an avid scuba diver, but that destroyed his credibility because one of the partners at the firm that he was interning was a scuba enthusiast and fooled Spiro into expanding on the subject, about which Pavlovich knew nothing. The firm contacted Tulane University and then Harvard Law. Harvard asked King and Spalding, the people who were thinking of hiring him, if it wished to press charges, but the firm declined. So he had been caught out and then expelled from Harvard Law, but he came back. He first enrolled at the University of New Orleans as a transfer student from Tulane with a new identity, Jason Scott Cord, and completed a very successful stint there. And then went back to Cambridge again for round two, this time with Uncle Sam guaranteeing repayment of Harvard's loans and using this different identity. He literally just dressed up, grew a goatee, wore a hat and glasses, and passed himself off as a new person. And he got in and managed to do that for a couple of years before getting expelled again. And that was the subject of this 1976 article by Jonathan Alter. But then back in 2024, as this article documents, this latest article from back last September, yes, apparently this Nicholas Rockefeller was the self-same Spiro Pavlovich III that Alter was writing about 4 or 5 decades ago. So this story is incredible, detailed. It's as I say, it's a three-part series. I would suggest anyone who is even vaguely interested in this should read the whole thing. It's a fascinating tale, if nothing else. We'll just go through a little bit of it. He talks about Nick's storied surname, sterling credentials, and high-level associations, which put him in the upper reaches of the American establishment. After graduating from Yale Law School in 1987 and clerking on the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals for Judge Dorothy Nelson, who considered him one of her best clerks ever, he became a partner in the Los Angeles office of Perkins Coie. Nick, as he was going by at that time, practiced what he called investment law and founded the Rockefeller Asia Advisory Group, Rockfest Development, Rockefeller Pacific Ventures, Rockefeller Resources International, and the Rockefeller International Fund. Nick mingled with George and Barbara Bush. He hosted events featuring John Kerry and Gary Hart and Steve Forbes and General Wesley Clark. He was well-versed on emerging Chinese capitalism and sat on panels at Davos there with Klaus Schwab himself. He was a member of the board of the RAND Corporation's Asia-Pacific Policy Advisory Board, as well as the Pacific Council on International Policy and the World Affairs Council. He traveled often to China, and his Rockefeller-branded investment vehicle spawned several Sino-American projects, as well as suspicions that he was a Chinese intelligence asset. In 2002, the mayor of Wuhan dedicated a plaque honoring Nicholas Rockefeller as an international advisor to the municipal government. But then, upon his death at the age of 78 on Halloween 2024, one of his Yale Law School classmates, Helen Kim, was by his side at that time. And then things began to unravel as Kim started to put the funeral arrangements together and start to look into Nicholas Rockefeller. She phoned the Rockefeller Global Family Office in New York, a call that dozens of people should have made over the previous 40 years, and was told that Nick was, quote, not recognized as a member of the Rockefeller family. Huh, interesting. So she went to investigate at the Century City office, the Chinese natural gas company that paid for Rockefeller's 4,000 square foot office. She went to their head office, the Rockefeller Resources International office, and got in and started going through his possessions. What she found in his desk drawers was jaw-dropping, a strange and haphazard collection of false IDs, passports, and birth certificates, an application to Yale Law School in the name of a legendary British aviator, and Nick's near-perfect LSATs, LSAT scores from 1983, et cetera, et cetera. It just goes on and on from there. And as I say, this is a very, very detailed study that goes through all the decades of duplicity that this Spiro Pavlovich III, a.k.a. Nicholas Rockefeller, was engaged in. And the Nicholas Rockefeller character he inhabited for 40 years. And as you see, he was there photographed with George and Barbara Bush and hobnobbing with the elite, the upper crust. How on earth did this happen? Well, that's really the question. And you will find some of the answers of how some of these people were duped and in what ways he was creating his fake credentials and how one fake ID opened the door for another fake credential and et cetera, et cetera. And it's, again, a fascinating story and lots of detail about specific names, places, and events. But it doesn't quite go all the way there. And that is something that Jacob and both Jacob and myself tend to think. Yeah, the Alter article is, as I say, fascinating, detailed, but doesn't quite go all the way. So let's go all the way. And in that regard, I had the chance to talk to Jacob Nordengard about this Alter expose, this deep dive, and what it does and does not say, etc. So let's get into this. And I started by asking Jacob, again, author of Rockefeller Controlling the Game, someone who knows something about the Rockefeller family, how he came about this latest piece of information about Nicholas Rockefeller, a.k.a. Spiro Pavlovich III, when it had completely evaded my research radar.
Yes, I as usual, it's not that I was looking for information about Nicholas Rockefeller. It was just... I was searching for something else when this came up. Something related to the Rockefellers. I guess now it just slipped my mind. I don't remember because as I saw it, it was just, what? This is the answer to everything. I started reading this, and it was behind a paywall. But it was so interesting, so I just had to read it. And upon reading this material, it was just mind-blowing what Jonathan Alter had found out about him. Because I am... Nicholas Rockefeller hadn't been on my radar for a while as well. I hadn't thought about him for a while. When I saw this, it was just, wow. with a level of defrauding, it was just astonishing. And being able to kind of act like a Rockefeller for 40 years without detection, and also being able to assume he was known as Spiro Pavlovich III, as you said, and assuming this identity after he had two times. Came into, he was accepted into the Harvard Law School with fake identities. And it was just, what? And the third time he could fake a Rockefeller identity. And he actually was, when he was at Harvard, he was kind of a bragging type. He liked to exaggerate things that he had done in his life achievements. So he dropped these things like he was the great grandson to the Tsar Nicholas of Russia and so on. And but he was a kind of a scuba diver that he was a kind of American football player, but and he had kicked the longest kick ever, and so on. It was a lot of outrageous claims. So people started to question him, not at Harvard Law School at first, but when he applied for some position during the summers at some law firms, and they started to question this and said, what is this? Harvard Law School, they start an investigation and find out that the second time he was in, they could see that it's the same handwriting as the Spiro Pavlovich, but now he had a new identity. And he actually went to court for this. So FBI, they arrested him and... they had this trial, but Pavlovich, he was very, he became very ill and had depression and a lot of issues that made it impossible for him to stand trial. And he had doctors talking for him and said he had schizophrenia or so. So he actually couldn't, he was never in trial for this. Didn't have to go to jail or anything for this. Instead, he went to Louisiana for 9 years before he assumed his new identity as Nicholas Rockefeller.
So what do we take from this report? As you say, it's incredibly detailed and interesting, but it seems that there are things missing from this story. What do we do with this information? And does it at all in any way alter your view of the Rockefellers that we get from your book?
Well, as I write in my Substack article, it's why don't the Rockefellers have commented on this? Because the thing is, he was in the Council on Foreign Relations, and he was had been in contact with or through his wife in crime with the Trilateral Commission and Jay Rockefeller and a couple of other Rockefeller institutions. So why haven't they commented on this? And why haven't Jonathan Alter, I think he should have been contacting the Rockefeller family office for their comment on this. Why haven't they done anything? And you have had an imposter for 40 years. He was in the Council of Foreign Relations. and now I forgot your question.
Well, but I think you demonstrate the point of the power of that name, but also the mystery around the ability of somebody to just go around and start using the name with absolutely seemingly no total impunity for decades, literally 40 years going around using that name, starting Rockvest and Rockefeller Philanthropy Fund and whatever else he came up
with. It's a misuse of a family name. Yeah. I mean, that's something that he should be in court for doing this. So it's just a mystery. But as I write in my Substack article, that's what was the point I was going to give, is that the Rockefellers themselves, they are very great, grand ancestor is William Devil Bill Rockefeller, a fraudster, a bigamist, and he's when you read about Nicholas Rockefeller, well, that was what Devil Bill did. So
I cheat my boys every chance I get, said Devil Bill.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
So it's famous. So of course. It's like, why would they do it? Why would they talk about an imposter Rockefeller? And
fascinating.
So
stuff.
Much things would come up in the light with exposing.
You would think so. Yeah. But So I guess the real question here is: then, what do we do with this information with regard to the infamous Aaron Russo interview and what Nicholas Rockefeller told him about what the Rockefellers were planning for humanity? What do we do with that information now?
Yeah, the thing is, that kind of information don't have to be wrong, because one thing is that how did Nicholas Rockefeller know about what would happen after this event? How could he come up with that knowledge? Did he just invent it, or just trying to say things to Aaron Russo to feel to be important and saying shocking things? Well, maybe not. If you are in the intelligence, if you are, because he met with a lot of powerful people with a Rockefeller name, so he can have known a lot of things what was going on, and also if he was in the intelligence. If you're in the intelligence, you get pre-knowledge of things that will happen. So don't have to be anything wrong with that information. But they can also use this thing with exposing now Nicholas Rockefeller as a fraud, but everything he has said was a fraud. So leaking that kind of information, and now we can close that. It was just a crazy conspiracy thing.
Yeah, it's a great way to discredit all of that information, isn't it?
Yeah, of course.
Once again, that is Jacob Nordengard of the Pharos Chronicles Substack. He also has his own website, pharosmedia.se, which will be linked up in the show notes so that you can go and acquire Rockefeller Controlling the Game, an important book and handy resource for people who do want to know more about the Rockefeller family. And you can also now pre-order Jacob's forthcoming book that will be published in English at the end of this month, March 31st. It is called The Digital World Brain, Our Common Agenda and the Pact for the Future. And Nordengard calls it a sequel to his Rockefeller book, where it talks about what they are trying to do in the long term, the big common agenda / UN / WHO game plan, and where it's going with the creation of the digital world brain. So plenty to dig into with regard to that topic. But with regard to the Nick Rockefeller topic, there's obviously plenty of room for discussion and lots of food on the table for a feast, a repast of scrutiny about this Nicholas Rockefeller story. There are still a number of interesting questions that hang out there and that I talked about with Jacob both on and off air, including, of course, some of the suggestions that occur throughout even Jonathan Alter's investigation that he kind of notes in passing. That Nicholas Rockefeller was some form of intelligence agent working for somebody. And this is a theme that followed him basically throughout his life, even back when he was a student and he was just a known man on campus at high school and going into college. There were people, for example, who considered that he was a, quote, spy for the working class who never reported back to the home office, is how one person put it. Or in high school, his besotted future wife called him James Bond. He was known as an actor and someone who could put on an aura of mystique and interest. So there's that sort of thing. Both of them had been arrested by the FBI, so they had some sort of contact with domestic intelligence. And the report goes on in part two and part three to talk about other interesting aspects of this. For example, at Mary's and other Yale haunts, Nick was more expansive when describing his time with NATO on the staff of British General John Hackett, the real, if long retired, commander of NATO's Northern Army Group. Sometimes he claimed that he worked for several years on a secret NATO project that required him to spend 6 weeks in a safe house in communist Russia. And one story that is related along those lines, one night over drinks, a classmate asked him about his spycraft. What if you suspected the person offering you documents was a double agent? Nick swished his thick scotch glass and in a quick athletic motion rammed it a fraction of an inch from his friend's face, showing that he could easily drive his nose into his brain. I had no doubt that he had been some kind of agent, the friend says. And there are stories like that that appear again in passing throughout this story over and over and over on into part three, talking about people suspecting that he was some form of Chinese intelligence asset because of his vast connections in that country and with various Chinese officials, including a young Xi Jinping before he became dictator for life back in 2002 when he was still just a rising star in the Chinese Communist Party. He was, Nicholas Rockefeller was in touch and trying to work deals with him. Now, most of Nicholas Rockefeller's deals and swindles came to nothing. He did not die a multi-millionaire. He died with, I think it was $35,000 in his account or something like that, and constantly borrowing money off of friends, constantly spinning the tale that he was in a battle over the Rockefeller Trust Fund with some of his family members, and I can pay you back as soon as this is settled, don't worry, and he never did, etc. So there's a lot to this story, and it's not that Nicholas Rockefeller was wildly successful ultimately in what he did, but or was he? What was the ultimate point of this con? And as Jacob asks, as any reasonable person would ask, why did the Rockefeller family never really go out on record, never make a deal about it, as this man was presenting himself as a Rockefeller and starting all these Rockefeller branded investment corporations and trusts and what have you, and sitting on boards and going to Davos and all of these places where the Rockefellers obviously had reach and influence, and even people sitting on the board alongside him, like at CFR? Why on earth did they never call him out? Who was he really working for? Speculate away, guys. There's clearly more to this story than we know, but I would also say that I, in opposition to those who think that it is all one grand conspiracy that's completely controlled by a few people at the top who literally control absolutely everything that happens on planet Earth, I think there is no doubt that Nicholas Rockefeller genuinely was a con of some sort, a con man, and maybe a spy, maybe something else. But anyways, genuinely a con man who genuinely assumed a Rockefeller identity and perhaps was permitted to do so or encouraged to do so, but at any rate, assumed that identity and successfully got away with it for decades, largely, and I'd say for most people, on the back of the fact that he never pushed it too far. He never played up his connection to the Rockefeller family too much in explicit ways. Like, oh, I was talking to David yesterday, and he said he never played that angle. He just more alluded to his connections to the family. And most people, most of the time, were willing to go along with it because here's this flashy, fast-talking guy who seems to spend money and looks the part. So let's go along with it. And a lot of people were seduced by the potential power and influence of being close to a Rockefeller and were willing to go along with it. I certainly do believe that a lot of people were just genuinely conned by that. Who would think that the person being so open and brazen about his Rockefeller money and connections would be a complete imposter? And who would think to check? Well, apparently not many people. In fact, even someone that he was working with in this company called US Search, which was specializing in ancestry, searching your ancestry and finding out family connections. His partner in that apparently never bothered to put Nicholas Rockefeller into his own search engine. So take that for what it's worth. Anyway, I would say there is obviously some level of con that happened here. And I would assume that is exactly what happened with Aaron Russo, that Aaron Russo was just genuinely conned by this person he genuinely believed was a part of the Rockefeller family. But yes, then the question becomes, so what do we do with the information that he imparted to Aaron Russo? Does it make it false? Well, obviously, from just in terms of logical fallacies, it doesn't mean that it is necessarily untrue, the things that Nicholas Rockefeller said. It just means that he probably did not know it in the way that he intimated that he did, that he had this as insider knowledge of the Rockefeller family. But he obviously knew a thing or two about a thing or two, including, as Alter notes in his article, he knew something about the Chinese economic situation and was a convincing enough trust lawyer, etc. So he was able to successfully operate in these spheres without being a complete and total idiot. So there must be something behind that. But another thing that is important here is that Alter, of course, completely sidesteps. And as Jacob talks about in our interview, he sort of gets to dismiss all of the things that he talked about with Aaron Russo in literally two sentences of this multi-part, thoroughly detailed and documented report. The entire Aaron Russo incident takes up two sentences. And he had a weakness for conspiracy theories, including for ones that involved the Rockefellers that he peddled to a Hollywood producer turned conspiracy theorist named Aaron Russo, among others. When Russo repeated Nick's theories on Alex Jones's radio show, they went viral, though none of Rocky's hi-hat friends seemed to notice. Again, interesting. The ignorance and, one would imagine in some cases, willful blind ignorance to what was right in front of their face is fascinating, but actually somewhat plausible. I do think that a lot of these people who are sitting on these boards and these powerful people are really just gophers who are filling seats in various positions of middle management power and not really the people pulling the strings and were genuinely oblivious to what was really going on. I will note with some interest that if I just tested this myself, maybe you'll get a different result. But when I went to YouTube.com and typed in Nicholas Rockefeller before posting this video, the very first result was, who is Nicholas Rockefeller? Questions for Corbett. So anyone in his orbit in the past decade or so who had just, I wonder who is Nicholas Rockefeller, had typed in his name into the YouTube search would have seen my questions for Corbett, where I said that he's probably a con man. So anyway, interesting stuff. But we're going to leave this for here for today. There's a lot to dissect here. Again, I think anyone who's even remotely interested in the subject should read Alter's three-part report and then think critically about what it does and doesn't say about Rockefeller and his real, who he really, really was and who he really, really might have been working for. Anyway, that being what it is, I think this is an instructive case in a number of ways, not only in the real life catch me if you can type of thing, which we now know is mostly garbage and mostly fake anyway. Well, here's the guy who successfully inhabited a role for four decades, but also it is an interesting way of trying to dismiss what could be very true and very valuable and very important information that came through this compromised source, which may in fact be part of the whole psyop that was the Nicholas Rockefeller character, who one way or another was retired on October 31st of 2024. Anyway, I just thought this was all very interesting, and obviously this relates to what I was talking about 9 years ago here on Questions for Corbett, so I thought I'd like to tie the little bow on it here for today, but I'm interested to see your thoughts on the whole Nick Rockefeller situation. So, Corbett Report members, of course, as always, invited to log in and leave your thoughts and comments in the comment section at CorbettReport.com. I'm looking forward to that, but we're going to leave this exploration here for today. James Corbett, CorbettReport.com, looking forward to talking to you again in the near future. Oil. The 19th century was transformed by it. The 20th century was shaped by it. And the 21st century is moving beyond it. But who gave birth to the oil industry? And what are they planning to do with that power in a post-carbon world?
The Rockefeller family has announced it will begin divesting from fossil fuel companies.
There is a price to carbon in their future.
The negative impact of population growth.
That is important not only for the planet, it is important for the business.
What do you see as the biggest challenges in conservation?
The growing human population.
How and why big oil conquered the world. Watch the documentary for free at CorbettReport.com or purchase a DVD copy at NewWorldNextWeek.com.